This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 66.
Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
I am still recovering. So, less Barry White, more like a Morgan Freeman right now.
Okay. Well, let's get started with the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 23.6 dog walking miles, and I'm down 10 pounds.
Well, good for you. I'm still not feeling good enough to do anything at all, really. I was home this afternoon, cleaned up the garage, and then sat down because I felt like I was going to pass out.
Wow.
Thought I had a fever, maybe strep throat. It's fine.
All right. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Today, Aaron's going to talk about addictions.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette.
Aaron, I see that your subject is addictions. I hope you're not going to tell us to stockpile some special substances, are you?
Not at all. It's just a fact of life that human beings get addicted to things, and in an emergency that knocks out infrastructure, those who are addicted are going to suffer without their fix. The most common addiction is to coffee or other forms of caffeine. I will confess that I need my morning cup of joe to get going, and without it, I am cranky and irritable. Fortunately, coffee is something that is legal to buy and very easy to store. So as long as you have supplies and a way to brew it without power, you're set. Now, personally, I am a heathen, and I prefer vacuum-sealed boxes of powdered Maxwell House French vanilla coffee, which means all I have to do is heat some water and mix it together, and bam, I have coffee and cream. But other folks might prefer ground beans, and without power, that means a manual way to prepare the coffee. For that, I would recommend a Kona French press from Amazon. It's $20, has just some amazing reviews, and works not only for coffee, but tea and espresso as well. And it's also designed for camping, so it's more rugged than usual with thicker glass and a protective metal wraparound. Which doesn't mean you should just throw it in your bug-out bag and knock it around, but it's a little better constructed than just a simple glass structure. Now, other common addictions are cigarettes and alcohol, and those are also legal to stockpile. They make good multi-use items. For example, cigarettes make good fire starters, and liquor can serve as a disinfecting agent. So these are useful to have in quantity, even if you aren't addicted to them. And after a disaster, they make good barter items for those folks who are jonesing. But alcohol can be a problem if you or someone you love is somewhere on the alcoholic spectrum. I have yet to meet a coffeehead or a smoker who is willing to do terrible things to indulge their addiction, and in a worst-case scenario, they're just going to be really grouchy until they've gotten over their cravings. Alcohol addictions, though, are full-on substance abuse problems. So, if you have a supply of alcohol in your preps and there is an alcoholic in the house, that person is going to have a very strong temptation to start drinking it, especially in the high-stress environment after a disaster, and that's going to cause all sorts of problems. In addition to the expected drinking your supplies and being drunk during a disaster problems, a severe alcoholic made-to-go cold turkey will often develop what's known as delirium tremens, aka the DTs, which is a fancy way of saying alcohol withdrawal. DTs are really nasty, and they can cause all sorts of problems, including high temperatures and seizures, which can even result in death. So in an emergency, it would probably be best to slowly wean the addict off alcohol. But the problem with that solution is that they are an addict, and now they know you have booze. So now you're back to guarding your supply so they don't drink at all. Past alcohol, we're talking drugs, either prescription painkillers or illegal street drugs. Now, it is just a bad idea to stockpile illegal drugs, so I am actively recommending against that, just in case the NSA is listening. And if you are on prescription painkillers, you need to get off them as quickly as possible before addiction sets in. So at this point, it probably goes without saying that if you have a debilitating addiction, or you have a family member who does, you need to get that under control now, before an emergency. Treatment for substance abuse requires knowledge and skills that are way too involved for this segment, so I recommend getting professional help. There is a webpage for SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, that will help you find a facility near you, and I've included the link in the show notes. In addition, if you are a family member of an addict, you may need counseling yourself. Serious addicts almost always require some sort of enabling, usually by loved ones who feed them, clothe them, shelter them, or give them money. And if those people won't enter rehab, then you may need help to stop making excuses for them. Sometimes you need permission to walk away and let loved ones succeed or fail by their own merits. And in those cases, it's probably you who will need the most mental health counseling. So check out Al-Anon. They're a support group for friends and families of problem drinkers, not the addicts themselves.
All right, Aaron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
Take care, Sean.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com. And as the adult child of an alcoholic, let me tell you, go to Al-Anon.
I don't have any personal experience with it, but I've heard horror stories about what it's like.
Yeah. So adult child of an alcoholic is a thing, right? And there's a couple of books out there that I read after I found out that my father was an alcoholic. I didn't find out that my father was an alcoholic till I was like 24 or 25. He would leave work at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and go to the bar and drink and then come home, because my mother never allowed alcohol in the house. And so my sister and I basically never saw my father when he wasn't drunk. So we didn't realize he was an alcoholic. We just thought he was an a-hole.
Yeah. I could tell some... See, my father was not an alcoholic. My father was allergic to alcoholics.
Oh.
Because of his experience with alcoholics.
Yeah.
So is there like a thing where you're like... secondarily allergic to alcoholics?
I think that's just called your upbringing.
So yeah, you hear some stories about what it's like to deal with people who just can't be decent people.
Right.
So you have my sympathy.
Well, the good news is my father did get sober about 5 years before he died. So I had five like good years with him.
Something my father didn't have. Felons behaving badly. Two arrested following fatal shooting near Gaston Courthouse. Police arrested two Gastonia men after a fatal shooting near the Gaston County Courthouse Tuesday afternoon. Gastonia police identified the victim as victim 49 of Gastonia. Suspect 1, 51, is charged with first-degree murder. Suspect 2, 30, is charged with being accessory to murder and possession of a firearm by a felon. Witnesses told WSOC-TV at the scene that the shooter was in a wheelchair. The shooting happened at 4:30 p.m. on Allison Avenue in Gastonia.
Stop by and say hi.
A few blocks from the courthouse. Shots were apparently fired during an argument.
This is my shocked face.
Yeah, in an argument. How surprising. It's amazing. They weren't just having tea?
No.
Little Polly Prissy Pants, and they just decided to, you know, okay, we're bored, we'll have a shooting.
Right.
So, suspect 1, forgery, 7991, felon class I. Uttering forged papers, 7991, felon class I. Larceny over 200, 8492, felon class H. Cell schedule 2 conspiracy, 5693, felon class H.
DUI level 3, 4-2, 2007, misdemeanor non-class code. Driver's license revoked 113, 2009, misdemeanor class 1. Driver's license revoked 925, 2002, misdemeanor class 1. Suspect 2, larceny 10-25, 2002, misdemeanor class 1. Misdemeanor breaking and entering 10-25, 2002, misdemeanor class 1. Larceny 131, 2003, misdemeanor class 1. Felony breaking and entering 9-29, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 9-29, 2003, felon class H. Felony breaking and entering 10-9, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-9, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-15, 2003, felon class H. Misdemeanor breaking and entering 10-15, 2003, felon class H. Felony breaking and entering 10-21, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-21, 2003, felon class H. Larceny 10-23, 2003, felon class H.
And this is like Energizer Bunny. Just keeps going, going, going.
Felony breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Felony breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Felony breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Larceny 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. Misdemeanor breaking and entering 10-26, 2003, felon class H. I don't know how you get misdemeanor breaking and entering becomes felon class H, but it does like three times.
Well, I don't know. Maybe when you have, what is that, 9,000 charges on the same day?
Apparently they stack up after a while. Felony breaking and entering 10-28, 2003, felon class H. Felony breaking and entering 10-28, 2003, felon class H. Larceny after breaking and entering 10-28, 2003, felon class H. Receiving stolen vehicle 10-30, 2003, felon class H. Assault with a deadly weapon, inflicting serious injury, 315, 2004, felon class E. Burglary, second degree, 315, 2004, felon class G. Common law robbery, 315, 2004, felon class G. Kidnapping, second degree, 315, 2004, felon class E. Larceny over 1,000, 315, 2004, felon class H. And larceny over 1,000, 315, 2004, felon class H. And all of those, felony, B&E, and larceny after B&E, all that stuff, they were like on one giant block. So this isn't me like I like got multiples and I like counted them double. No, there was one giant entry.
Right.
So this wasn't me like double counting anything.
Yeah.
And then guess what? We get to the victim. Tamper with motor vehicle, 1126, 1985, misdemeanor, pre-Fair Felons Act. Larceny over 200, 1126, 1985, misdemeanor, pre-Fair Felons. Tamper with motor vehicle, 130, 1986, misdemeanor, pre-Fair Felons. Larceny over $200, 130, 1986, misdemeanor, pre-Fair Felons. Possessed Schedule 6, 9, 487, misdemeanor, pre-Fair Felons. Assault with a deadly weapon, 527, 89, misdemeanor, pre-Fair Felons. And misdemeanor breaking and entering, 525, 2011, misdemeanor class 1. Pre-Fair Felons Act, before the Pre-Fair Felons Act, they didn't have class 1, class 2, class 3 misdemeanors, so they didn't break them down the same way they do now. That's why they're all listed as pre-fair felons. So he had been convicted of multiple misdemeanors, no felonies.
Interesting.
This week in Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki talks about the attack on Paris. Nikki, I get the feeling I know exactly what you want to discuss in this episode. I know you have family in France, right?
Yeah, I do. So my dad's first cousin, his mother's sister's daughter, has lived in Paris most of her life. Her mother gave her up to a German couple living in Paris during the war to hide her from the Nazis because she was a little Jewish girl. And they hid her and they raised her as their own. So she grew up there, married a French guy, and they had two great kids who now have kids of their own. One of my cousins actually came to visit us in D.C. with his family in 2011, and they're just an amazing family. I've known them since I was a teenager. They'd been dating since then, and they've been married for like ever. So when I heard about the attacks on Paris last week, My first reaction was to get in touch with them on Facebook and just ensure everybody was safe. I also have a really good friend, a Fulbert colonel in the army, who's actually the military attaché in Paris. He just arrived there recently with his family, so needless to say, I have more than a little personal interest in the attacks. And not just because I'm a thinking, feeling human being.
So we know there are more than 130 people dead. We know that the Islamic State has taken credit for this attack. It seems that France has been getting more than its share of a pounding by the Islamists this year. Is there anything that could have been done to prevent this?
You know, it's hard to say. Europe is a very welcoming place. The rules of the EU say that the EU member where refugees enter has to process them. It's called the Dublin Regulation. It determines the EU member state responsible for examining applications for asylum seekers seeking international protection under the Geneva Convention. Dublin Regulation also aims to determine rapidly the member state responsible for an asylum claim and provides for the transfer of an asylum seeker to that member state. Usually, the responsible member state will be the state through which the asylum seeker first entered the EU. Well, as we explored before, many European countries simply don't have the resources to process the hundreds of thousands of refugees flooding their borders. So a lot gets missed, including stringent background checks.
Are background checks even possible?
Well, they might be to a degree, but frankly, the West doesn't have a whole lot of intelligence assets in Syria, so doing a strict check to ensure that an applicant for asylum doesn't have terrorist associations is nearly impossible. It's also hard to know who's a true refugee, who's an economic refugee, and who's a terrorist hiding in the huge haystack of refugees as a needle ready to strike against the West. Additionally, it's pretty easy to purchase Syrian papers. The Daily Mail reported back in September that ISIS fighters and economic migrants are able to buy Syrian identity documents that allow them to hide among refugees traveling to Europe pretty easily. The Daily Mail investigative reporter was able to buy a Syrian passport, an identity card, and a driver's license from some scumbag in Turkey. The documents were apparently genuine, stolen from Syria, where they were at one point blank. And then the forger added the Daily Mail reporter's picture, gave him the identity of a Syrian man from Aleppo killed last year. There you go. That's how easy it is for terrorists to get Syrian identity documents and sneak into Europe. And because Syrians are getting special treatment now due to the civil war going on there, Syrian passports are in demand because they allow easier access.
So how to prevent this stuff from happening?
Well, I'm not sure there's really any way to guarantee that terrorists won't enter Europe. But French President Hollande did the right thing. The first thing he did was shut down the borders. It may not prevent all of these maggots from entering France, but it could at least help.
In the meantime, our administration has already allowed 10,000 of these refugees into the United States, right?
Yep. And some of them are in Louisiana, arriving right on the heels of the attack in Paris. How smart is that? And Governor Jindal is rightfully ticked off. The DNI, James Clapper, expressed concerns a while ago about our ability to properly check these refugees to make sure they're not connected to terrorist organizations. ISIS claims responsibility for the downing of the Russian airliner a few weeks ago. They attacked Paris. They're staging attacks in Libya. I just don't understand how anyone in this administration can continue claiming that letting these people into this country is a good thing. It's dangerous. We could be facing another 9/11, and I'm not just fear-mongering. Look, I get it. I've said this before, both on my site and on social media. It sucks for the people who are really seeking a safe, secure place to just live out their lives. It sucks. I get it. But you know what? A government's primary purpose is to protect its citizens from violence. And while it's nice to be kind to those in need, your citizens should come first. So as Europe is discovering, being nice is opening the door to terrorism. Europe is generous, Europe is safe, Europe is welcoming, and now Europe is paying for it.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plugs of the week.
You got hair plugs?
We got three plugs of the week this week. And this time, none of them are things that are going to benefit the podcast. So you can buy one of them. The other two are free. And none of the money comes back to us. How did this happen? Wait a minute. When did we get all altruistic?
I don't know. Just roll with it.
Okay, cool. All right. First up is episode number 37, even though it looks like it's episode 36 of the 2A Today podcast, with the guest, Beth Alcazar of Pacifiers and Peacemakers. This is a great episode of the 2A Today podcast, which you really should be subscribed to anyway. And Beth is one of those great female voices in the gun industry that I really want to hear some more from. And I'm going to send her an email. I would really like to see if we can get her to be a special guest on this podcast because she was really cool. I think if you listen to her on the 2A Today podcast, I think you're going to want to hear her on this podcast too. So check it out. 2A Today, episode 37 or 36, or just look for Beth Alcazar. It's the most recent 2A Today podcast, and given how frequently the 2A Today podcasts come out, it'll probably be a little while before the next one comes out, so it'll probably be the top one. But look for Beth Alcazar, Pacifiers and Peacemakers. You'll see it. The second one is something completely different. It's a children's book, and it's a Kickstarter one at that. Do you like lemurs? As I've said before, I run a science fiction and fantasy podcast. It's called the Wrong Fun Podcast, and our first special guest, game designer Ken Burnside, contacted me and he says, "Hey Sean, I got a friend, she's an artist, and she did this lemur-themed children's book called Just One More. Can you give it a boost?" So, you know, I give it a look. I'm thinking, what, you know, children's lemur book? What are you talking about? Well, it was really, really cute. I'm like, that's adorable. I got to have one. So I shelled out the $15 plus $3 shipping and I get the early bird Christmas deal. So I'll get my own copy of it. Now, you know, it's not vaporware like, you know, most of your Kickstarter projects. She's not still drawing this stupid book. You know, you're not paying her to go out to draw this thing. This is like the second edition of it. It's already been done once. It's already been printed once. People have already got copies of this previously. She's just doing a second run because people want more of them. So get out right now, pay $15, and you can have it by Christmas. It's an extra, you know, it's $3 for shipping, so $18 total. And if you pick the $25 option, not only will you get a book, but you can get yourself a sketch of either a lemur or another animal of your choice. And finally, another of my narration projects dropped this week. Podcastle episode 390, Flash Fiction Extravaganza Bears. Just hit iTunes on Friday. I've got the second story, a very short story by David Steffen called My Wife is a Bear in the Morning. So I played that one for you, Adam. What'd you think?
It was pretty funny once I figured out what was going on.
I just started playing it and you looked at me like, what the heck are you saying? And I'm not talking.
Right. I was like, wait, what? Yes. Okay. Got it. Right.
So I get this email from Rachel K. Jones. She's the co-editor of Podcastle. And she sends me this email. Can you read this? I need it back pretty quickly. And she gives me something like 2 weeks. Well, I sent her an email back. You're damn right I can read this awesome story. And I had it recorded, edited, processed, and in her hot little hands in 3 hours. So check it out. That's Podcastle, episode 390, Flash Fiction Extravaganza Bears. The link is in the show notes. But you can find it pretty easily by searching for Podcastle, that's P-O-D Castle, in iTunes. This week, our special guest is Ryan Machad of Handgun Radio. Ryan's here to talk about Bloomie's assault on Maine gun owners with his attack on private gun transfers. Ryan Machad is the host of Firearms Radio Network's Handgun Radio. He has a background in classic and modern handguns, as well as military history and firearms history and research. He's a recent graduate of the University of Maine with a bachelor's in psychology. In addition to guns, podcasting about guns, and making videos about guns, Ryan is a guitarist and plays live gigs in central Maine. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
How you doing, Sean? Glad to be here.
Ryan, you live in Maine. Nanny Bloomberg has decided to attack Maine along with California, Arizona, and Nevada. He's riding his personal hobby horse, trying to ban private transfers of firearms. How's this going to play out in Maine?
Well, honestly, at this point, it could really go either way. For people who aren't terribly familiar with the way that Maine is divided politically, it's kind of regional. So south of Topsom, Maine, which is probably about, 40 miles south of where I am, Maine starts to become a little bit more left-leaning. And I don't want to really stereotype and say all gun owners fall in a left or right category, because there are gun owners across the political spectrum. But typically in Maine, that tends to be the people who want to further Bloomberg's ends here in Maine.
So what kind of Maine gun owners are there?
Well, you have the hunters, which are the typical ones that you see. And then you have the people who are really big firearms collectors. There's actually a surprising number of firearms collectors based out of Maine. We have the James D. Julia Auction House, which is right near where I am. And you would be surprised at how many people go to their rare firearms auctions. There was quite a few people that came up to the last one I went to. So you have that, and then now we have the constitutional carry law that just went into effect. But even before that, we had a lot of people who had their concealed weapons permits, and I always loved pointing out to the people who were like, "Oh, great! Now everybody's gonna have a gun. Everybody's gonna be carrying a firearm around me, and I'm gonna feel unsafe." And I love to point out that you do realize that you probably ran into 10 or 20 people today that were already carrying firearms with a permit, and you didn't even realize it.
So if they end up banning private transfers, how are these two groups of people going to be affected by this?
Well, basically, any good hunter knows if you're crossing a fence or something like that, you open your rifle's action and hand it to your fellow hunter if you are hunting with another person, so that way you can cross the fence safely. Well, now that if this Bloomberg thing does pass on a petition, that is, then you will be committing some sort of a felony. I'm not sure what they've categorized it as just as of yet. I have not seen the text of their proposed law, but I'm sure it's similar to the Washington law. Basically, you will be committing a crime by handing your rifle to a person there. Also, target shooting and recreational shooting in Maine is a big thing. We don't really have, we have a few organized ranges, but we typically don't. We basically find pits and go shoot in pits or on our own land. Like I have a personal range on a friend's farmland. And so people will loan firearms to be able to, you know, oh yeah, take my firearm and go recreationally shoot. And now that right there in and of itself will be illegal. So that will really affect it. And then the collectors, I mean, you know, some people have firearms and you have Maine has a large elderly population too, and some of these collectors may be, you know, older, may not be able to go to these auction houses, so they have a friend take the firearm for them to the auction house. That in and of itself also may be illegal now with this new law.
The big anti-bear hunting law crashed and burned in Maine a couple years ago. Do you think that will give us some hope that the pro-right side has a chance against the millions that Bloomia will use to try to buy this election?
Well, I do think it will. That was a big deal for us because there was a lot of out-of-state money that came into that. And that was one thing we were trying to prevent this time around, because Maine is a very self-reliant state where a lot of people up here really believe in personal responsibility and how to stand up on their own, how to, you know, pull themselves up by the bootstraps and not have to rely on anybody else. And also in that same vein, we try to rely on the fact that we want Maine voters to decide what happens in Maine. We don't want people from out of state coming in and deciding what happens in this state. And, you know, you hear that a lot during the summertime where people will make fun of the tourists and stuff. And I don't think that's particularly right. But we don't want people who don't live here influencing what we have to live with for the rest of the year. Say they come up for the summertime and they vote. Or there's a big contention right now because a lot of college students who don't even live in Maine, who don't own property in Maine, who don't register their vehicles in Maine, are being able to sign these petitions. Once they leave at the end of the semester or end of the school year, that's not going to affect them. So that's one thing that we try to prevent. We really don't want that happening. We want the people who are going to be directly affected by these laws to be the ones making the decision. And then again, they also went with, because the legislature wouldn't do anything on this front. So they went the next route. They're gathering petition signatures. They were doing this at all the polling locations on November 3rd when we had our local municipal elections. They were trying to gather signatures for the petitions. And they were out in force, especially more so in the southern part of the state. Like I said, it's basically Massachusetts north. And if you ask my friend Weirdbeard here, he will say the same thing. Portland and most of southern Maine is basically Massachusetts north. I believe it. At one time in our history, it actually used to be part of Massachusetts. So I definitely see them trying and maybe getting a little bit further with their petition gathering, but I'm really hoping to find out that they just did not gather enough signatures and it won't even make it on the ballot in 2016.
All right, Ryan, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again soon.
Good to be on with you, Sean.
You can hear more from Ryan at handgunradio.com. Handgun Radio is also available on iTunes.
Fun with headlines.
All right, so this one's going to take a little bit of explaining. This was written on November 19th, 2015. And the facts that we knew, and I'm doing air quotes, on that day when this was published kind of make this headline ridiculous. Okay? Woman who died in Paris raid had been under surveillance. Just kind of passively died during a raid, you know, maybe got shot. Maybe, I don't know, fell out of a window.
Well, I remember a woman dying in a Paris raid, but I don't remember her falling out of a window.
Yeah, you know, no, it was a little more active than that. And, you know, this is called burying the lead. Suspect lived a secular life, drinking alcohol and rarely visiting a mosque, but police say she died an extremist death, blowing herself up by detonating a suicide vest.
Oh, so yes, that was what I remember. So, and she'd been under surveillance. So, so she was a known wolf. They yes. had been watching her. They knew she was a terrorist, even though she was not going to a mosque and drinking alcohol. That's kind of weird. Why were they watching her if she was like out partying it up and not going to the mosque?
Yeah.
That seems kind of strange.
The 26-year-old daughter of a Moroccan immigrant had been under police surveillance because her name came up in a drug trafficking case.
Wait a minute. She was under surveillance because they thought she was involved in drug trafficking?
Yeah.
Not because they thought she was some crazy Islamist?
Nope.
Well, how many different ways can they mess up the headline on this?
I don't know.
Wow, that's like a twofer.
Yes. And, of course, so now it's Friday the 20th, and we've actually learned today that she didn't actually blow herself up. The guy standing next to her blew himself up.
Oh, so she just got blown up in the...
Right.
In the crossfire.
Right, right.
Poor woman.
Yes. Poor woman who was...
Standing next to a terrorist.
Next to a suicide bomber and in the apartment of lots of terrorists. Poor woman. Why are you afraid of women and orphans?
I don't even know.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I don't know. I'm not sure I want to know. I got nothing. Baron is still on assignment and will remain so for probably another month. The J Block. I would really like to know who educates the people that we see on television.
They educate themselves by reading daily costs.
Do you think they actually know how to read?
I'm pretty sure that they know how to read. Because that's mostly what they do for their job, is they sit in front of a camera and read words.
Okay, do you think they know how to read and synthesize the information that they read into a bigger picture that then they could then take that information as a whole and draw conclusions from?
I actually don't think that that is true.
Okay, because I think that's really the problem. Because what I keep hearing after watching all of this information and putting it together myself, is that this Paris attack was highly coordinated and highly trained, and this mastermind put it together, and this was a grand plot. And I'm watching it, and I spent a number of years in my country's uniform, and all I can think is that if I could find sufficiently psychotic drunken privates, they could have come up with a better plan than that. If I could have found 9, 10, 11 army privates who were psychotic enough to actually want to murder people, they could have come up with a better plan than the Paris attack. What did these people achieve in a strategic sense?
They killed a bunch of people.
No, in a strategic sense.
Oh.
I'm going to ask somebody very famous to tell me what strategic objectives were achieved.
Nothing.
That's exactly correct. They achieved
nothing.
Not a thing was achieved. They spread blood all over the place. They murdered a whole bunch of people, but they changed nothing about the world around them.
there's this belief that they were highly coordinated because they managed to carry out multiple attacks in different parts of the city. As if, what, do people not know that they have these things nowadays where people can consult them and learn what time it is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My phone does that.
Well, yeah. Nowadays, most people use their phone for this. But, you know, a number of years ago, they had these things called watches that people wore on their wrist. And prior to that, when they were too awkward to wear on your wrist, you could wear them in your waistcoat and they were pocket watches. But, you know, you can still get watches for your wrists. I still see people wear them. My father-in-law wears one. I think my father wears one. I don't remember. I could ask him when I see him at Thanksgiving. But it's not that complicated to say, hey, you go shoot up something over there and the cops are going to run over there. And you go shoot something up over there and the cops are going to run over there. And that's going to kind of thin the cops out and we'll go and murder a bunch of people that happen to be watching some people play some music. Really not that complicated a plan. And highly trained, you found this one. Tell us about this highly, 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 highly trained commando that they dredged up.
Yeah, so the Daily Mail got a hold of the surveillance video from the cafe where the first attack happened. And you can see, number one, the guy opening fire with an AK from across the street through the windows and whatnot. And then a couple of minutes kind of later, he is walking around to finish off some people who are hiding under some tables, goes over, stands over them, and is out of ammunition.
So he rapidly changed magazines and re-engaged.
No, he ran away.
No, seriously, he just like changed mags. I mean, it's not really that hard. We've all watched Sonny Pazookas just sort of do that quick old like mag change thing.
Yeah, no, he just he ran away.
He detonated his like bomb vest.
Nope, ran away.
Transitioned to his secondary.
No, ran away.
Pulled out his knife.
Nope, ran away.
But these guys were like highly trained.
Well, maybe he was highly trained in running away.
Okay. And then they captured the mastermind. I guess they captured him with some bullets.
Boom! Headshot!
God, it just bugs me every time they refer to this clown as a mastermind. Because, see, Moriarty is a mastermind.
Moriarty didn't get caught so many times in Belgium trying to plot things that he had to go and pretend to be a Syrian refugee to get back in the EU.
Moriarty wasn't identified as the mastermind within 24 hours of the end of the first thing that he, you know, anybody thought he had done. And by the way, Moriarty didn't say, all right, you know, Faisal, you go over here and shoot them people. And, you know, Mohammed, you go over there and shoot them people. Oh my goodness. A drunken parody of a bunch of psychotic army privates. I'm serious when I tell you that a bunch of army privates could have come up with a better plan than this. Because a bunch of army privates could have thought far enough ahead to think, you know, if we escape and attack somewhere else and escape and attack somewhere else and escape and attack somewhere else, it would be really terrifying. But bang, 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 la, 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 la. Well, shoot, now it's over. Then we get everybody thinking, oh, wait a second. We don't understand the plan. So that means the plan must be really complicated. There must be wheels within wheels within wheels. No, honestly, the plan really is that stupid. Just because you think the plan is so stupid that you don't understand it, therefore the plan must be complicated because you don't understand it, that doesn't mean the plan isn't stupid. No, the plan is stupid. The plan is just to murder a bunch of people. It really is that dumb. These people aren't masterminds. This was not a highly coordinated, highly trained assault. This was a bunch of stupid people murdering people. It was amateur hour. People ended up dead. That's bad enough. Let's not try to turn this into some kind of thing that it wasn't. The world is bad enough. Don't make it worse than it is. And now a word from our sponsor.
You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs.
Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey, or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us. This week, Weird does another patented Weird Audio Fisk. This time his target is Girl Pants Productions' Straw Man Bonfire, How Gun Advocates Sound to Normal People, in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery. Well, hey, Weird, what do you got for me this week?
So directly after the mass killings in France, Bloomberg's drones are doing all they can to make political hay out of this terrorist attack. I'm sure they'll only get worse. These guys called the Boston bomber a victim of gun violence, for God's sakes. But for the time being, it isn't enough for a full segment. Thankfully, Aaron found this YouTube video that is quite a bit lighter in fare. It comes from a schlocky YouTube channel called Girl Pants Production, and a bulk of their videos are titled How X Sounds to Normal People, and it covers delightful topics like how climate change deniers sound to normal people, or how gender inequality sounds to normal people. You'll quickly get the impression that normal people simply is code word for progressives. As you might guess, they did one on guns. Now, first up, I generally have a rules of engagement policy. As a rule, I only target my activism towards A, politicians who have the desire and ability to pass anti-gun laws, B, members of law enforcement who may choose to ignore our fundamental rights and freedoms, C, activists pressuring politicians to pass anti-gun laws. This keeps me from feeding the trolls, and in line with that great political maxim, always attack up. These guys are essentially YouTube C-listers, so I'm really not that concerned about them, but A, the video is rather funny, and B, they aren't saying anything new here. It's really just standard boilerplate. So these statements and rebuttals could be used for most encounters you might have with antis in the field. So enjoy this one.
Now is not the time to talk about fire safety.
So in the video, there's a house on fire, and the man talking is holding a lit blowtorch. No, it's not. It's time to call the damn cops and arrest the arsonist. They use this scene 3 times in the video, and in the end, they mean fire safety the same way the antis mean gun safety.
Why are you taking that? It's completely unnecessary.
What if there's an avalanche at the office? Somebody's gotta be the good guy with the shovel.
So this is just what could be considered a fundamental difference between people who carry guns and people who would like to legally ban us from carrying them. I do keep a shovel in my car. One of those folding and trenching tools are cheap and compact, and they can really save your tail if you go off the road, or if your car gets stuck. Also, I keep it in my car year-round because A, it also works for mud and sand, and B, I don't want to need it and realize I didn't put it in my car that day because I had forgotten to look at the weather, or I didn't expect to hit that patch of black ice or spilled oil. I carry a gun everywhere legal, not because I expect to need it. On the contrary, I expect to die a ripe old age having never shot anything that posed a direct threat to me. But boy, it sure sucks to really need a gun and not have one. And it could suck for the rest of your life. That's why I carry.
If we outlaw murder, only criminals will murder.
Not really sure what they're trying to say here. Murder is illegal, like everywhere. And everywhere we have murders. Criminals don't care, and they murder anyway. And where they ban guns, criminals get guns anyway. Like guns, there's a flip side to murder. Justifiable homicide. It's using lethal force in self-defense. Really, the appropriate analogy is, murder is a problem, so we're going to ban all self-defense. That's really what gun control is.
I'm not saying you can't do it. I just think you should get more training and a license first.
This is my God-given right, as an American, to fly a plane if I want to.
Now this one really isn't half bad. I used to be firmly in the camp of mandatory safety training. and the bulk of people with concealed carry permits in this country were mandated by law to sit through NRA basic pistol or an equivalent class before they got their permit. Still, there are a significant number of states where the classes are either really elementary, lacking, or not required, or the state has constitutional carry. And those states do not have more accidents or legal issues with defensive gun use. Now think about it this way. Did you take a foreign language in school? Me? I took three. French, Latin, and Japanese. I couldn't pass a test in any of those classes today. But the one language, besides English, that I have the best command of is Latin. Surprising, isn't it? It's because I'm a scientist, and us scientists like to write terms and jargon in Latin. So I deal with it a lot. A class is only as good as the continuing education the practitioner puts into it. And frankly, the guy who cares about keeping his shooting skills sharp and knowledge of the laws current doesn't need a mandated class because he's already taking one.
Sure, we could raise taxes, but the rich people are going to find a way to not pay them anyway, so why bother?
So here's just another thing that progressives love. They love banning guns, and they love raising taxes. I don't like either, because this country spends the money it has in a responsible manner, just like it does a good job at keeping dangerous criminals off the streets. Raising taxes or banning guns in these circumstances not only won't do any good, but it'll also make the problem worse.
AIDS? But what can I do?
Well, in a perfect world, we'd get rid of all the AIDS, but we all know that too many people have it already.
Did you catch that? Guns are viruses! Icky, icky viruses, and exposure to them will make you sick. That's progressives for you. You get the feeling that if one of these people accidentally touched a gun, he'd spend the rest of his day compulsively washing his hands with betadine, trying to get the evil off. Also, I thought the progressives called themselves people of science. HIV is a virus, and we have never cured or exterminated a virus. Period. Full stop. Technically, the smallpox virus is considered eradicated, but that's only because of widespread vaccination and containment of the disease. And the idea that we could either vaccinate against guns, or violence for that matter, is pure fantasy. But also, it's not like the anti-gun forces are demanding we disarm the police or the military. And Michael Bloomberg and Shannon Watts travel with armed guards. There's nobody who's pro-AIDS. But there are very few people who are truly anti-gun. They may not want you or I to carry a gun. And they may even want the traffic cop who pulls him over for speeding to be unarmed like the English bobbies. But when he hears his door get kicked in at 3 a.m. and he calls 911, it's because he wants a gun delivered to his home. Same with when there are terrorists gunning down people in the streets of Paris. Even the most anti-gun French socialist wants the cops and military to show up with guns. Big guns if they have them. So yeah, there are a few more things in this video if you want to check it out. Still, remember, you might hear some of these very same straw man arguments when you encounter an anti-gunner in the field, and a quick, polished response can do a surprising amount of good to someone who really isn't committed to the movement yet.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Stuff that grinds my gears. Why don't you go first this week, Adam?
Accounting.
Accounting.
I now know what it sounds like to you when me and Baron talk about 1024-bit public encryption.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this is the least favorite part of my job, and I sit in meetings now and am dumbfounded as to how money, like, so let me just give you the example, right? So Chris has all the money, okay? He gives money to Larry. Larry gives some of that money to Carrie. Carrie gives some of that money to Neiman. Neiman gives me that money, but all of that is just on ledgers, right? That's all fake, right? I mean, the money's real, right? But who actually has it? It's not like they're passing out dollar bills, right? It's just moving money around in various like ledger entries. So it gets to me. Well, I'm the guy that actually has to buy stuff. I can't find anybody that'll sign a check because they've already spent the money, right? Because it's off their books because they spent it. So when I go and say I need $500,000 because you guys gave me $500,000 and I need to go and spend it, like actually spend it, I get told, we don't actually know who owns that money. Okay, well, where is it? Well, we already spent it. No, you didn't spend it because it's all fake. Like, oh my gosh. Oh. So this has been the last like 6 weeks of my life. It's probably contributing to the sinus and the being sick all the time. And now, so the interesting thing is that had I not been on my third major when I took my first accounting class, I probably would have become an accountant.
Yeah, you wouldn't have.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. Maybe. No?
No.
You don't think I'm an accountant?
No. Well, actually, I don't know. I took an accounting class once. I don't know what they teach in accounting class anymore, but I took a double entry bookkeeping class, you know, the actual accounting 101 class.
Right.
And it's all really logical. The problem with it is that it's all that very fiddly. You must add and subtract perfectly correctly or you screw everything up and it all comes crashing down.
Right.
It's very annoying.
So one of the accountants actually told me that there's two types of accounting, right? There's tax and audit. Well, there's two types of accountants. There's tax accountants and audit accountants.
Uh-huh.
And if you go into tax accounting, they make you sign a piece of paper that says you will never, ever, ever, ever counsel someone on how to pay less in taxes. And he couldn't sign that. So he goes to audit. So just remember, the people, if you ever have an actual CPA that's doing your taxes, they have signed a piece of paper that says that they will never, ever teach you how to pay less in taxes.
Okay.
How about you, Sean?
It's all about Facebook again.
See, if you would just learn from me and get off the book of face, your stress levels would be much lower. Of course, then we would have nothing to talk about, so maybe you should stay on Facebook.
But see, is it the Facebooks? Is Facebook the problem? Or is Facebook revealing the problem?
Facebook is revealing the problem, and you were blissfully ignorant before Facebook.
Yes. Can we stop passing stupid rumors on social media?
No. No, we cannot.
Adam, did you see the French anti-terror battle shield with all the bullet holes in it?
I did.
How do we know that that's actually a French anti-terror police battle shield?
Because somebody said so on Reddit.
Did you see the story about the ambulance that was packed with explosives outside a German metric football game?
I did see that.
Did you also see that there wasn't really an ambulance bomb after all?
Yes.
Like we talked about back in the J block, these terrorists are amateurs. They're not culturally, technically, socially, or strategically aware people. They're a bunch of people that think murdering a crowd of music fans and then killing themselves is the height of good planning. I spent the entire week watching people go back and forth on Facebook spinning ever more fantastic tales of what the terrorists might do if they, I don't know, had any damn sense. But the problem is they don't have any sense. If they had the ability to put together a long-term, coherent plan for world domination, they'd see that blowing people up and shooting them in cafes and concerts was moronic, so they wouldn't do it. When I was a young boy, fresh out of high school, in college, I was an ROTC cadet. We had this Special Forces Master Sergeant. I'll never forget him. His name was Master Sergeant Tabor. We were worried about terrorism going on in the late 1980s. There was talk of this new-to-us suicide bombing. We were suitably frightened by the idea that someone might be so dedicated to his cause that he would be willing to die to accomplish it. Master Sergeant Tabor looked at me and he asked me a simple question. Sorrentino, which person are you more afraid of? The guy that wants to kill you so badly that he'll die to do it? Or the guy that wants to kill you so badly that he'll spend however long it takes to find a way to catch you unaware so he can kill you and get away with it? The guy that'll ask his smart friends to help him figure out a way to catch you with your pants down so none of them will get caught either. Which one of those guys scares you more? Well, the second guy, Sergeant. Damn right. First guy's an idiot. He'll come straight at you first chance he gets. Might get lucky, but you'll have a pretty good chance of getting him. You'll never see that second guy coming. I've never been afraid of suicide terrorists since. It's a stupid tactic used by stupid people. And we need to stop terrorizing ourselves by dreaming up ever more baroque plots to destroy Western civilization that exist only in our fevered imaginations. Like I said back in the J block, the world is dangerous enough. We don't need to pretend it more dangerous still. Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
and Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
And hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com.
Like and share us on Facebook.
Why do you still have Facebook?
And if you receive this podcast through iTunes, make sure to leave us a glowing 5-star review.
Show notes can be found at GunblogVarietyCast.com/episode66.
This is a URS production.